Tuning in, we survived the tropical storm that came blowing through here. What was it, Ida? Was that the one that, man, it was bad. However, we were able to rely on the good graces of Green 960 in San Francisco and one of their premier talk show hosts there, Angie Quiro, and her production people, her producer and her board ops and her engineers. Thank you, thank you, thank you to Angie and John and everybody at Green 960 for in San Francisco for really pulling the chestnuts out of the fire, as they say. Anyway, we're back, and all the trees were removed from all the downed wires, and we have power again, which came on at 2:30 this morning, and we know that because we were sound asleep, and every light and radio and television and broadcast piece of equipment that we had in the house went on all at once. So we, in about the second hour, we're going to play for you another example of how the right wing, in all its various disguises, continues to just lie. There is no need. Whether it's the Clean Coal Organization, aren't you tired of that woman? The woman dressed in black that walks towards the camera, and I swear to God, she looks like she's going to pull out an ice pick and start stabbing something. Whether it's the Clean Coal so-called organization or the Family Research Council, some of these right-wing pseudo-Christian groups. It's astonishing. We're going to play that bit of sound for you. And also at the bottom of this hour, something I want you to stick around and hear. You'll know what it is probably when I start. There's a section in New York Times Online called BreakingNews.com. If you haven't gone there, it's there are all these little interesting places on the web. You know what I'm saying? If you go to New York Times or Washington Post or CNN, wherever you go, don't stop there. There's all kinds of little nooks and crannies in those websites now where they have some really interesting bloggers and little bits of news that you don't see unless you or you don't know about unless you go to some of these nooks and crannies. Well, BreakingViews.com at New York Times Online is an interesting site. They had a piece there today that talks about how American workers are overpaid. We're overpaid. American workers are overpaid. Now, they said workers. They're not talking about the thieving sons of bitches that run Wall Street and the financial services industry and the banks. They're talking about American workers are overpaid relative to equally productive workers elsewhere. That means in other countries doing the same work. What? Okay. Let's just continue. And these three writers at New York Times Online said if the global economy is going to get into balance, you know, if anything is going to be solved, that gap, the pay gap, must close. Now, when I finished the first couple of sentences, I was just so goddamn mad, I had to stop. This is early this morning. I hadn't gone for our 4-mile walk yet. I'm sitting there, and I'm starting to seethe, and I'm thinking, boy, this is not good. You just had a cup of coffee, high-powered, dark roast coffee. You don't need adrenaline pump like this. So I set it aside until I came back from the walk and was, you know, because Kathy and I walk with weights and we really push it. And, you know, when we usually come back from that, we're just like, ah, oh, my God. Ah. So I figured, okay, I'll do that, take the walk, then come back. So I did. The article went on to say that workers in the United States should earn more than their peers in China, Moldova, or Vietnam. Of course, it says, you know, of course, we should earn more than them. But how much higher should American wages be? And I realized, okay, I'm too stiff to go walk another 4 miles. So I'm just going to sit here and wade through this. And then they went on to answer their own question. They said the answer depends in large part on two measures. The difference in productivity in making goods can be traded across borders and the quantity of such goods. Now, I sat there and thought, okay, the answer depends. All right, what do they mean? The difference in productivity in making goods being traded across. Aren't we the most, we have the most productive workers in the United States, or in the world. We have them right here. Okay, so the answer is that one. And the quantity of such goods, don't we make the best in the world? I mean, we make stuff that lasts. I guess maybe the Germans do better than we do, but don't we or don't we? I don't know. Maybe I'm stuck on some advertising slogan from the 50s or 60s, but I think we make pretty good stuff. They continue that many factors are raising productivity in poor countries. Fast development, cheap capital, and more efficient shipping all help. So they go on to say that the American worker, in order for America to regain its feet in the global economy, that the American worker has got to be beat down even more. That's the subtext of what they're saying. Well, we should make more than the workers in China, Moldova, and Vietnam. Golly damn! China, Vietnam, and Moldova? Oh, okay. And what? Maybe not as much as workers where? In Bolivia, Nicaragua, and Tajikistan? I mean, what the hell is going on here? But there it is. There it is in the New York Times. There it is. American worker, you're way overpaid. You don't deserve this. You know, if you go to work in the what's left of the auto industry now, thanks to the UAW, you go in as a new worker at $14 an hour. Your daddy went in at $28 an hour and a nice pension package, nice benefits and yada yada. Oh, and don't give me that crap about the unions destroyed Detroit. Unions, by God, didn't. It was because going all the way back to 1948, nobody in the political class in this country had the sense to institute single-payer health care. That's A. B, the stupid-ass decisions made by the Detroit auto executives. That's what. It wasn't the unions. The unions built the middle class in this country. End of discussion. Now, the new workers in the auto industry will be lucky if they make $14 an hour. If you look around at the jobs, you know, we have 20% underemployment or unemployed in this country. What are the jobs that are available? Last statistic I heard, 6.5 people looking for one job. One job, 6.5 job seekers, which is horrible. That's Great Depression levels, are approaching rapidly, if not already there. So what's the answer to capitalist America? Well, it's very simple. As long as you have that many people looking for work, ta-da! You slash wages. That's a whole one of the operant theories behind capitalism. Reduce the cost of labor. Bring it down to zero we can't do that anymore because slavery's been abolished. But that's the perfect condition. So there you have it. A couple of people. I'm surprised it wasn't on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. That's where I would think neo-fascist capitalist idea like this would appear on the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal. But no, there it is. There it is in New York Times Online, breakingviews.com. American wages are out of balance. I'll be a son of a bitch. Well, anyway. All right, just by chance, David Sirota, writing at openleft.com today, had something that kind of ties in with this. We'll talk about it for a moment when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. All right. American workers make too much money, according to one of the little opinion sites at the New York Times Online. And in order for us to become competitive in the global market again, in other words, in order for American workers to get a paycheck, any kind of a paycheck, they're going to have to reduce everything. Standard of living, expectations, plans for the future, ability to save, all of it because the American worker is going to have to reduce his or her wages down to the point where we can compete with, all right, we can have a little bit more than the Vietnamese worker, the Chinese worker, or the Moldovan worker, but not too much, or we're going to price ourselves right out of the global market. Like I said, it just went through me like a knife. And then David Sirota, writing openleft.com today, points out that, you know, we've seen corporations use these so-called free trade agreements like NAFTA and GATT and all this other crap to camouflage their push for exploitable labor where it concerns globalization. And as Sirota points out, what we haven't seen is corporate special interests openly push for U.S. regulators to allow companies to sell goods made with child and slave labor. We haven't seen that until now. Until now. There is a report from Inside U.S. Trade, and Sirota got to this. There's no link to it that's available. You got to have a subscription. But this is from his I blank you not file. I poop you not, only doesn't say poop file. Here's what it says at Inside U.S. Trade. Quote, business groups are worried by the potential effects of provisions banning the import of all goods made with convict labor, or forced or indentured child labor that were included in a customs bill sponsored by Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus and Ranking Member Charles Grassley. Now, let me digress. These two members of the Senate, Baucus and Grassley, put into this customs bill that American, here in this country, American retailers could not sell stuff or could not import stuff made with convict labor, forced labor, or labor from kids, whether it was forced or indentured. Indentured, that means little child slaves. The Inside U.S. Trade article goes on. These groups, business groups, are examining the ramifications of the bill's provisions, especially in light of the bill's requirements that a newly created office in the Department of Homeland Security annually report to Congress on the volume and value of goods made with child labor, forced labor, or convict labor that have been stopped at the border. Business sources say this reporting requirement could cause the Department of Homeland Security to more actively seek out imported products made with child labor, forced labor, or convict labor One source did expect a push from lobbyists closer to the Finance Committee markup of the bill. See what that means. When this goes to debate and discussion in the Senate, then the lobbyists are going to move in. These reptilian sons of bitches are going to move in. And they're going to try to convince members of the Senate that U.S. business must not be so restricted to where they can't have child labor, convict labor, or forced labor. Now, quick. Who used to do that? That's right, the Nazis! And what were the Nazis? Were they communists? No! Were they socialists? No. Were they liberals? No. Progressives? No. What were they? Well, they were financed by George W. Bush's grandfather, but they were fascists. And what do we have in this country? Fascism rising. So when you put these two together, what does it mean? Does it mean that in order to compete on the global market, the lobbyists are going to try to strip from this bill any provision that prohibits child labor, products made with child labor, forced, coercive, indentured, slave from coming in this country? The lobbyists are going to say, no, come on, be a good sport. This is what Tom DeLay tried to do in the Mariana Islands about a decade ago, try to get legislation passed that prohibited imposing any rules on the Chinese factory owners who were making American goods from using young kids who, after working hours, they would then rape to make stuff that would be sold here. You see, and some of our members of Congress said, this is not right. And Tom DeLay said, oh, leave him alone. So what does this mean now for our country? I'll tell you what it means very quickly. It means that there's a push to strip away from our laws any laws prohibiting child labor. Why? Because we have to compete. Why? So that capitalism can flourish. Well, put a fork in this country because it is done.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play. Starched white shed. You will find bigger piggies stirring up the.
It was a time of great and exulting excitement. The country was up in arms, the war was on, and every breast burned the holy fire of patriotism. The drums were beating, the bands playing, the toy pistols popping, the bunched firecrackers hissing and sputtering. On every hand and far down the receding and fading spreads of roofs and balconies, a fluttering wilderness of flags flashed in the sun. Daily, the young volunteers marched down the wide avenue, gay and fine in their new uniforms, the proud fathers and mothers and sisters and sweethearts cheering them with voices choked with happy emotion as they swung by. Nightly, the packed mass meetings listened, panting, to patriot oratory, which stirred the deepest deeps of their hearts and which they interrupted at briefest intervals with cyclones of applause, the tears running down their cheeks the while. In the churches, the pastors preached devotion to flag and country and invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause, an outpouring of fervid eloquence which moved every listener. It was indeed a glad and gracious time, and the half-dozen rash spirits that ventured to disapprove of the war and cast a doubt upon its righteousness straightaway got such a stern and angry warning that for their personal safety's sake, they quickly shrank out of sight and offended no more in that way. Sunday morning came. Next day, the battalions would leave for the front. The church was filled. The volunteers were there, their faces alight with material dreams, visions of a stern advance, the gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender. Then Home from the War, Bronzed Heroes, Welcomed, Adored, Submerged in Golden Seas of Glory. With the volunteers sat their dear ones, proud, happy, and envied by the neighbors and friends who had no sons and brothers to send forth to the field of honor, there to win for the flag, or, failing, die the noblest of noble deaths. The service proceeded. A war chapter from the Old Testament was read. The first prayer was said. It was followed by an organ burst that shook the building. And with one impulse, the house rose with glowing eyes and beating hearts and poured out that tremendous invocation, God the All-Terrible, thou who ordainest, thunder thy clarion and lightning thy sword. Then came the long prayer. None could remember the like of it for passionate pleading and moving and beautiful language. The burden of its supplication was that an ever-merciful and benign Father of us all would watch over our noble young soldiers and aid, comfort, and encourage them in their patriotic work, bless them, shield them in his mighty hand, make them strong and confident, invincible in the bloody onset. Help them to crush the foe, grant to them and to their flag and country imperishable honor and glory. An aged stranger entered and moved with slow and noiseless step up the main aisle, his eyes fixed upon the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached to his feet, his head bare, his white hair descending in a frothy cataract to his shoulders, his seamy face unnaturally pale, pale even to ghastliness, with all eyes following him and wondering. He made his silent way. Without pausing, he ascended to the preacher's side and stood there, waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued his moving prayer and at last finished it with the words uttered in fervent appeal, Bless our arms! Grant us the victory, O Lord, our God, Father, and protector of our land and flag! The stranger touched his arm, motioned him to step aside, which the startled minister did, and took his place. During some moments, he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes in which burned an uncanny light. And then, in a deep voice, he said, I come from the throne, bearing a message from Almighty God. The words smote the house with a shock. If the stranger perceived it, he gave no attention. He has heard the prayer of his servant, your pastor, and grant it. If such shall be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import, that is to say, its full import, for it is like unto many of the prayers of men, in that it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of, except he pause and think. God's servant and yours, your minister, has prayed his prayer. Has he paused and taken thought? Is it one prayer? No, it is two. One uttered, the other not. Both have reached the ear of his who heareth all supplications, the spoken and the unspoken. Ponder this. Keep it in mind. If you beseech a blessing upon yourself, beware, lest without intent you invoke a curse upon a neighbor at the same time. If you pray for the blessing of rain upon your crop, which needs it, by that act you are possibly praying for a curse upon some neighbor's crop, which may not need rain and can be injured by it. You have heard your pastor's prayer, the uttered part of it. I am commissioned by God to put into words the other part of it, that part which the pastor and also you in your hearts fervently prayed silently and ignorantly and unthinkingly. God grant that it was so. You heard these words, grant us the victory, O Lord our God. That is sufficient. The whole of the uttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words. Elaborations were not necessary. When you have prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory, must follow it, cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening spirit of God the Father fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commandeth me to put it into words. Listen. O Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth to battle. Be thou near them, with them in spirit. We also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord, our God, Help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless with their children to wander unfriended the wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst, sports of the sun flames of summer and the icy winds of winter, broken in spirit, worn with travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it for our sake and who adore thee. Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love, and who is ever faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore beset and seek his aid. With humble and contrite hearts, amen. Ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits. It was believed afterward that the man was a lunatic because there was no sense in what he said. Mark Twain. As a note here, Mark Twain wrote this during the U.S. War on the Philippines, during the Spanish-American War. It was submitted for publication, but on March 22, 1905, Harper's Bazaar rejected it as, quote, not quite suited to a woman's magazine, end quote. 8 days later, Twain wrote to his friend Dan Beard, to whom he had read the story. He wrote, quote, I don't think the prayer will be published in my time. None but the dead are permitted to tell the truth, end quote. Because he had an exclusive contract with Harper and Brothers, Mark Twain could not publish the war prayer elsewhere, and it remained unpublished until 1923. You're familiar with that, aren't you? The war prayer. Powerful stuff. I was talking to a friend today, Bob, and talking to him yesterday, too, and we agree that the most powerful American writer ever was Mark Twain, followed by a whole raft of others, including right up there in the top five, top three, perhaps, Are you filling in? Probably in the top two or three, Kurt Vonnegut. But Twain's writings were powerful testaments to the not just the insanity of war, but the insanity of the people, the population of the countries that supported war, that would in such delusional states send off at the time, their young men, to go die, to go. And the war he was writing about, the Spanish-American War, was specifically about the expansion or development of American empire, nothing else. And to what end? To satisfy capitalism. That's all. That's all. So. Every time I have occasion to read that, you know, not on the air. I just mean to read it. It moves me, and I guess a prayer like that is fitting on Veterans Day.
Primal Scream, You Suppress, Embrace Your Inner Liberal Warrior with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. One of my regular correspondents here is a guy who goes by the name Foxhole Atheist. He's a veteran. And he sent this to me today. He said, after waking in a pool of sweat over 5 years after the tour of duty that still rules my nightmares, I wrote down the thoughts I had after waking. And he addresses this to the Republicans in my family. One of the things that has been bothering me the past 3 years is a total lack of remorse or regret from any of the Republicans I know. Here's one simple fact. If you voted for George W. Bush, you voted for a criminal. You voted to send me to an unlawful war. If you vote Republican, I know you don't care about America. But what bothers me is that if you vote Republican, you don't even care about your own family. If you have a daughter, your Republican vote is a vote to turn your own child into a slave. When you vote a Republican, you voted to send your family members in uniform to a foreign land to commit mass murder. I watched my platoon open fire on a soccer field full of women and children. I want you to remember that the next time you're at the park or football field with your children. How would you like it if during your child's little league game, the Army drove by and started killing everyone with machine gun fire? I'm tired of your excuses. I'm tired of your false justifications. And please keep your pity and sympathy. If you vote a Republican, I no longer want to see your face. If you truly believe in a God in heaven, you better start atoning for your sins now. You can start by saying you're sorry to all the people you're guilty of killing. Start with the American soldiers you turned into mass murderers. Next, you can apologize to the 9/11 victims you killed. Yes, those Americans were killed by Republicans. Next, you can apologize to the 400,000 Iraqi civilians you murdered. And finally, you can apologize to the 44,000 Americans that die every year because you believe poor people should just get sick and die. Apologizing's not enough. If you're truly sorry for what you've done, you must never again vote Republican. If you apologize and continue to vote Republican, you're just a lying coward. This is what's on my mind. This is why I take life so seriously. It's not just politics. Politics is a matter of life and death, and whatever you do, don't even think of telling me, well, I didn't know. In America, ignorance is no defense. Personally, I forgive children of ignorance. That's because they have no way of knowing. You, as an adult, have no excuse. The knowledge and information needed to make informed decisions is at your fingertips. And with the internet, you no longer have to even leave the house to know what is going on in the world. Foxhole Atheist. Boy, I hear you. I wonder if your family will. And I think I got time to squeeze this in. Our military affairs correspondent, about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, she wrote this letter to the editor to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She writes, quote, I was disappointed to see that Georgia Senator Saxby Chambliss and Johnny Isaacson, both Republicans, did not support providing nearly $2 billion in emergency funding for veterans' medical care. Many Veterans Affairs hospitals are running out of money and into deficit spending, especially now that they are also caring for soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. While every Democrat in the Senate voted for the amendment to provide the much-needed veterans' funding, all but one Republican senator, Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, voted against it. Every Republican. A lot of Republican politicians talk about supporting the troops, sending men and women to a combat zone and not caring for them after they are wounded and disabled is not supporting the troops. Talk is cheap. Caring for our veterans is not. Signed, Sharon Gordy, Atlanta. That was 4.5 years ago. Sharon wrote that letter to the editor of the newspaper here in the Atlanta area. Sharon sent me a lot of stuff, some of which I'm not going to be able to use tonight because of time constraints, but she is our military affairs correspondent for the simple reason that she believes in the valor, I said this the other night, and honor that can accrue to military service, no matter what country you're from or what side you're on. And in addition to that, she comes from a family that's chock-a-block with veterans. And in addition to that, she understands fully of the American military has been corrupted from the top down. How it's being used and has been used for decades now as an instrument for corporate America to hammer its way into whatever country it wants to hammer its way. And that's the reason she's our military affairs correspondent. What else we got? All right, real quick letter here from Trish in Sparks, Nevada. Hi, Mike. Hope you survived the rains in good shape. We did. Here's a bumper sticker I saw the other day here in the Reno, Nevada area. God bless America, especially the snipers. There was another sticker on the pickup truck that I saw that one on, indicating proud membership in some kind of organization. So that's Exhibit A. Exhibit B has nothing to do with Exhibit A exactly, but it's just another symptom of how far our country is detached from reality. Obama at the Fort Hood Memorial waxed extremely sanctimonious, using his soaring phraseology to express my own outrage. He said, quote, "No just and loving God looks upon drone bombers with favor," end quote. Or did he mean lone bombers? If Obama can read the sky being's mind, so can I. Quote, "The killer will be met with justice in this world and the next. And who would that be? Soon. Sorry, I always send you my angry stuff, Mike. In truth, I'm a pretty happy person. But what do we do when the insanity is staring right at us?" Trish in Sparks, Nevada. I don't know. You know, Hunter Thompson said, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. I don't know, Trish. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. The Malloy program. Now we have something coming up at the bottom of this hour that I want you to stick around for. It was from Morning Meeting on MSNBC with Dylan Radigan. I think it was today, wasn't it, Kathy? He had two female guests, Nancy Keenan, who is a spokeswoman for NARAL, National Abortion Rights Action League. These are people who believe in pro-privacy rights for women. And Kathy Roos, R-U-S-E, who is a senior fellow at the American Family Research Council, which is a thinly disguised right-wing religious fascist organization. And I want you to hear this. We'll play it for you bottom of the hour. Regarding what I was talking about at the beginning there from the New York Times blog on the New York Times online site about the American workers being overpaid, and the subtext of the little piece there by three writers was the American worker better wake the hell up and realize that he or she has got to become competitive with what turns out to be forced child labor in Vietnam or Moldova or China, wherever. That's not what they said. They said, just get used to lower wages. You're going to have lower wages. It's in the cards, globalization, yada, yada. And then the article on David Sirota's website about where he quoted from a obscure, to you and me, obscure, not to people, not to the full-blown predatory capitalists, it's not obscure, an online publication that is alerting its readers that those dirty sons of bitches in Congress, Grassley and Max Baucus, one Republican, one Democrat, have tacked on an amendment to something that says the Department of Homeland Security has got to be checking up on imported products, stuff, and to make sure that it is not produced by child labor, forced labor, or prison labor. And this business, pro-business, pro-capitalist website thinks that's terrible and it shouldn't be there because, you know, American business has to be competitive. And if it means we can't use forced child labor, these goddamn predatory bastards. And some of you people wonder why I've switched completely now to an idea of democratic socialism. Are you kidding? We are so, I can't use the language I want to use. Oh, well. And no, I don't think taking to the streets is going to do a thing. You know, put 500,000 people in the street, yawn. Put 2 million people in the street, double yawn. Unless they're all armed. And we don't want that. Anyway, Prairie 2 was listening to that about pay cuts, about how the American worker is just being hammered into the ground. And the standard of living. Do you understand what's going on here? If you've got little kids, what you have to do, you have to do this. I don't care what it takes. You have got to make sure that your child, as he or she goes through primary grades, secondary grades, that he or she goes to college, goes to university, and gets a degree in the health sciences, in something. Applied sciences, something. Don't abandon your child because things are changing to the point where, all these jobs that our generation or the generation that is older than we are, all those jobs, they're gone. They're not coming back. They're not coming back. So people in our age group are essentially screwed. But our kids don't have to be. Whatever you have to do, I don't care. You know, and it doesn't cost $40,000 a year to send your kid to college. You can go to a state university. You got to do this. You know, Kathy and I talk about this a lot. I'm just trying to stay alive to get Molly through college. But and even if I don't, you know, trying to make provisions so that Molly will be able to get a degree that can translate into employment. I don't know how else to put it. You know, the days of just kicking back and getting a BA in English or a liberal arts degree, I'm sorry. I mean, you can do that after you have gotten your master's in occupational therapy or your BSN or your MSN or your degree in chemistry or biology or engineering. Okay, fine. But you have got to do that. You got to make sure that your kids listen to me. I'm sorry. I don't mean all of a sudden I'm lecturing. I don't lecture. I'm sorry. I bitch and moan and complain, but I don't lecture. Never mind. Prairie 2. Who was listening to that said, he writes in, he says, I've been ranting about this for years, that this was coming, this depression of wages. American workers deserve a slightly larger steel bunk with a little better straw in our concrete barracks, but no heat. That's going too far. We can't compete because they can work harder to get warm. And don't forget what was over the gates of, was it Dachau, Buchenwald, Arbeit macht frei? And don't correct my German pronunciation. I realize it's probably not right. Work Makes You Free, or Through Work Freedom. Remember that? Auschwitz, was it Auschwitz? Arbeit macht frei. Frei? You know what it is. There is, I don't know if this constitutes breaking news, but it's being touted on websites, news websites, as breaking news. And I have the TV monitor on here in the back. And when Rachel first came on at 9 o'clock, it was breaking news. Apparently, President Obama has decided that he is not going to pick one of the four options that everybody thinks he's going to pick. And according to the French news agency, Sharon sent this to me, U.S. envoy to Afghanistan has written memos to Washington expressing deep concern over possible deployment of thousands of new U.S. troops to the country. Ambassador Carl Eikenberry's classified cables, I don't know how they got released to the public, but anyway, they are, reportedly detail his strong reservations against sending reinforcements until Hamid Karzai's government shows it can tackle corruption that has spurred the Taliban resurgence. That's according to the Washington Post, New York Times. Eikenberry's cables also express worries over Hamid Karzai's erratic behavior. The correspondence was sent ahead of President Barack Obama's critical war cabinet meeting today at the White House on what course to pursue against the insurgency in that country. And also, Obama is warning about the Afghan commitment. He is apparently he is saying that he's not going for what the so-called four options. Eikenberry joined the policy meeting by video link. This is according to the French news agency from Kabul. That's according to New York Times, adding that Obama discussed his concerns with him, according to officials requiring anonymity. The envoy, Eikenberry, our ambassador, also voiced concern that sending tens of thousands of additional troops to the war-wracked country would boost Afghanistan's reliance on U.S. security forces, as the Obama administration calls on Kabul to take over more responsibility. Eikenberry's views are in stark contrast to top U.S. and NATO commander General Stanley McChrystal, who warned that without tens of thousands more U.S. troops, the Afghan mission, quote, will likely result in failure, end quote. Four options were on the table. After which, during these talks, after which officials reported the president had not yet made a decision. Sharon sent that to me. Now, I heard earlier today also that now David Petraeus has more or less released to the public his feeling that the president is waffling. The president is better make a decision pretty quick before it's too late. Jesus, God.
Radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
One thing I don't understand is with McChrystal and now McCreus on the public record for more or less demanding more bodies into the meat machine that is the insurgency in Afghanistan. That's not our war. It never has been. Here we go again. But the mere fact that these two four-star generals, one the head of CENTCOM, one the head of all U.S. And allied forces in Afghanistan, going on the record publicly for a course of action. I mean, what in the hell has happened? Military commanders don't do that. Not in normal protocol. That is just, it's so off the table as to render it almost seditious even just to hear this. military commanders all the way up to, you know, Eisenhower rank, 5 stars, take their orders from a civilian, and they keep their goddamn mouth shut until those orders are handed to them, and then they carry them out with their mouths shut. McChrystal is insane. He is a war lover. He's a blood and guts crazy person. Petraeus is an ass kisser, an apple polisher. And both of them should be fired. They should have been fired when they opened their mouths. This is insanity. So these 2 4-star generals released to the public statements that are just so far off the table as I said, to render them almost seditious, treasonous. For one reason, so that the right-wing chicken hawks back here in the United States, every goddamn Republican in the House and the Senate, and I know a couple of them served in the military, I'm not impressed, they're all chicken hawks. And these chicken hawk bastards that comprise right-wing radio and television. So that these punks, these cowards, every one of these Republican right-wing neo-fascist cowards that are on the air 24/7, border to border, coast to coast, can then use the statements by McChrystal and Petraeus to further undermine the President of the United States. When he may or may not be trying to, you know, we don't know what's going on with this long process. Is it a long process? I don't know. I've been told it's a long process. Who tells you that, Mike? These right-wing sons of bitches. I don't know what the process. I don't know how much thought and planning and listening you have to do before you commit another 30, 40, 50,000 people to go kill and die and be wounded permanently. I don't care if you come back unscathed physically. You're going to come back scathed deeply, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. So he's taking some time. Why is he taking time? Is this the president? I know I've been getting in his case. I know I've been saying things about him. Is this the president who's trying to figure a way out of the rat hole? Who's trying to say, wait, you know, yeah, they took me in the room and showed me the Zapruder film. Yeah, you know, they sat me down and told me this and told me that. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, they threatened my wife and kids. What do I do? What do I do? Is he trying to do something? You know, I offered up the suggestion. I don't know why he didn't immediately say, get on the phone and say, listen, I was listening to Mike Malloy's show the other night online. Because we don't get it here in Washington, D.C., but I was listening to the Malloy program, or was it Sirius or XM? Maybe that's what it was. But I was listening to the Malloy program, and you know what he said to do? Go ask the Senate for a declaration of war. Why should this be on my back? I'm the executive. I'm the president. I don't have that constitutional power. And all these right-wing pissants in this country, the chicken hawks who want more blood and destruction, and McChrystal and Petraeus and the rest of these people who want their war games because they're insane. Okay, here's what you do. Read the Constitution. Read the section about the power to make war. And that's where I'm taking it. Calling a joint session of Congress. It's up to you guys, you gals. You want war? Vote it. Why didn't Obama listen? Well, you know, why? I guess he doesn't get the program. Maybe that's it. Yeah, I guess that's it. Oh, man. All right, we have a lot of ground to cover when we come back, so... when we do come back, we will... We'll set it up. How long does this run? About 6 minutes. Okay, I want you to hear this. From, I think it's today, MSNBC's morning meeting with Dylan Radigan, the newest program host in MSNBC's broadcast day. I like his show. I do. I like his show. This guy really has his facts. I've watched it a couple of times. It's on pretty early. 9 o'clock in the morning, usually about the time either Kathy or I are taking Molly to a kindergarten. But anyway, I'll give you a taste of it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Take the reins of our season.
nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Dylan Radigan's program was launched, I think, back in early summer, June, July. And I didn't pay too much attention to it back then, but I've started to notice his program, and it's by virtue of the fact that some mornings, just to get pissed off enough to get out of bed, I will put on, if it's Kathy's turn to take Molly to kindergarten, I'll put on Morning Joe and watch the last 20, 30 minutes of that. God, I hate that program now. Oh. And that's the lead-in to Dylan Radigan. So anyway, I think this is from today's. He had two guests, two women, Nancy Keenan, who is with the National Abortion Rights Action League. They are pro-women's privacy organization. They believe that women have the right, the ability, whatever, to make their own decisions in private where it concerns their own bodies. And Kathy Roos, senior fellow American Family Research Council, this is a woman who has had her head removed, her brain removed, and replaced with instructions. So after noting that the Family Research Council called the Stupak Amendment a huge victory for women, that's the one that denies women the right to an abortion, even if they use their own private money, has nothing to do with government-financed anything. After noting that the Family Research Council called the Stupak Amendment a huge victory for women, Dylan Radigan asked Kathy Roos this.
With us now, Nancy Keenan, president of Narrow Pro-Choice America. She called the Stupak-Pitts Amendment an outrageous blow to women's freedoms and privacy. Also with us, Kathy Roos, senior fellow at the Family Research Council. That organization called the amendment a huge victory for women and their families. Kathy, what was the victory?
Well, the victory is that the question is elective abortions and who should be forced to pay for those, the individual or the government. Before the Stupak Amendment passed, Americans would be forced to pay for other people's elective abortions.
That's not true.
That is
incorrect.
Under both the public option plan and under the federal subsidies.
It's not true.
Absolutely true. That's
the objection was to the use of the exchange. I'll have this debate, but you have to operate in the factual reality, which is you're saying that all of the private insurance being sold on a publicly established exchange cannot fund elective abortion.
Dylan,
federal dollars paying for abortion. That's federal dollars paying for an exchange upon which private insurance is sold, where elective abortions are provided.
The Stupak Amendment did two things. It prohibits federal funding for covering elective abortions, but it allows private insurers to carry coverage of elective abortions so long as no federal tax dollars are involved.
Yeah.
And let
Dylan,
me just highlight the point.
Kathy, you're not dealing with, you can't, just coming on television and lying is not journalism, nor is it actually beneficial to the country. Let's talk about what we're discussing, which is the establishment of an exchange upon which private insurance will be bought and sold, established with federal dollars. Nancy, you were going to say?
Yeah, listen, we know that about 80 to 85% of private insurance companies today presently cover abortion care. And what the Stupak Amendment does is basically means that women will not be able to purchase insurance coverage that covers abortion with their own money, in this new health care system. That's the reality of the Stupak Amendment, and it is outrageous that they are saying that this is good for women or that this is somehow the status quo. This goes far beyond the status quo.
Kathy, if you answer my question, I'll keep you all day. If you just want to talk, I'm going to ask you to go away. Why is it a victory for women to ban women from being able to use their own money to buy private insurance that would cover elective abortion? How does a woman win by being denied the opportunity to use the money she makes working in our economy to buy private insurance that may provide her with a selective abortion. Why is that a victory for a woman?
Most American women oppose federal funding of abortions.
You know, that's not my question, Kathy. I'm asking you a very specific question. Imagine, close your eyes. Imagine I'm a woman and I've got my own money and I want to buy a health insurance plan that gives me the possibility of an elective abortion.
STUPAC allows.
No, it doesn't. Not on the exchange. That's the whole point.
It allows private insurers to cover elective abortions.
It's not
as
true.
Long as the federal
that's
dollars
the whole
are not
point
involved.
Of it. It's crazy. Nancy,
no,
go
listen,
ahead.
It's no,
not the
no,
entire
this is
point
not true.
Of this is to use the fact that private insurance is sold on a publicly funded exchange to ban all private insurers from being able to sell coverage with elective abortion.
They can sell coverage
Dylan,
with elective
this basically
hold on,
riders
Kathy, hold
and
on,
additional.
Kathy.
Dylan, this, but you are exactly right. This means that if private insurance companies want to participate in the marketplace, in the exchange, they, as private insurance companies, are not allowed to have policies that provide abortion care because, quite honestly, they are just not going to go into the marketplace if it's not allowed in that marketplace. And that's why it is so far beyond the status quo and is so unjust to women in this country who, again, want to purchase insurance with their own money are not allowed to do
it. It does seem like a good way if you want to reduce the availability of elective abortion in this country to basically prevent private insurance from paying for anybody to have an elective abortion. This is a great way to get that done, wouldn't you say,
Dylan,
Nancy?
Can I say
what
something
doing
about
here? There's a goal
Kathy,
here,
hang
Dylan.
On. Go ahead,
Dylan,
Nancy.
Dylan, there's a goal here. They want Roe versus Wade overturned fundamentally, and they want to derail health care reform. And that is the strategy of this STUPAC amendment. They want to derail health care reform, and they're using this as a way to do it. And again, it is unconscionable that the women of this country are going to be denied insurance coverage because of the STUPAC amendment.
Yeah. All right. Listen, Kathy, in the future, if you could just come with the inside the domain of the facts, it makes for a more productive conversation. I recognize it's gratifying to cast the accusations because it gets people worked up. It's fun. You're like, the government, I hate the government, or a government's paying for, but it's not what's going on here. There's an exchange that's being established by the government upon which private insurance will be bought and sold with private individuals, and the argument in STUPAC is that that exchange should not be a place where elective abortion can be conducted. It's more beneficial, I think, to the whole country if the debate is had inside the domain of reality as opposed to sort of just nonsense.
Can I talk about the status quo? Can I make a point about that? We hear that this is going to change the status quo. Well, the status quo is today most people pay for their abortions out of their own pocket. And while insurers carry abortion coverage, most employers don't include that as an offering in their insurance. And so most Americans today don't have elective abortion insurance coverage. So what this would do without the STUPAC amendment would be a massive expansion of insurance coverage of elective
that
abortion
is so wrong.
Subsidized
that is so
by
wrong.
The federal government. Americans are against this. 64
Nancy,
Democrats
make
are
your
against
last point,
this.
We'll get out of here.
That is so wrong. 80-85% of insurance policies in this country offer abortion coverage. And so the fact is that women who presently have that coverage are going to lose it. And the bottom line about health care reform was that women should not lose what they already have. The STUPAC amendment basically forces women to lose what coverage they presently
right,
have.
Nancy, Kathy, we'll talk to you soon.
Aside from the fact that Dylan Radigan has the honesty or the courage to just say to these right-wing nutballs, you're lying. That's a lie. Aside from that, the discussion clarified for me, I have not really taken a look at the so-called STUPAC amendment, and now I understand what it is. And it is truly a poison pill. The STUPAC amendment, I don't know who got to this dino, Democrat in name only. He's from Michigan. I'm sure he's Catholic. I guess the Catholic bishops, U.S. Bishops Association, whatever, got to him. By what? By offering him money or by telling him that if he didn't introduce the STUPAC amendment that they were going to not deny him entry into heaven and cast him into hell, make sure Jesus looked at him and said, no, goddammit, go to hell. I don't know how they got to STUPAC. But this amendment is just, and it's exactly what Nancy Keenan, the narrow representative, said. It denies women in this exchange, the rent, the phones, for the exchange will be paid with government tax dollars. And inside that exchange will be private insurance companies looking for private customers using their own money. And the Stupak Amendment says, okay, but no insurance company can participate there if you offer abortion services or payments for abortion services. And as Nancy Keenan pointed out, 80 to 85% of policies already offer that. Kathy Roos, the spokeswoman for the Family Research Council, is, you know, that's supposed to be a Christian organization. And every time these sons of bitches open their mouths, it's a lie. Every single time. I don't care if it's Nancy Roos or Glenn Beck or George Bush. It doesn't make any difference. Every one of them is just an upfront liar. And, you know, to have a TV talk show host like Dylan Radigan, and I think Tweety Bird has done it a couple times too, Chris Matthews, but to have Dylan Radigan just call the woman a liar. You know, you're lying. You know, if you can't address what I'm talking about, you know, what Radigan is saying, and I think this needs to be said over and over to these right-wing vermin. Look, this is my program. I'm the host. I invited you on. You agreed to come. Now speak the goddamn truth or take your dollies and marbles and get off my TV set. Would that there were more of that, huh?
Keep your hands to yourself.
To practice your synchronized screaming, it's Mike Malloy.
You know, 10 before the hour, you know, I sometimes am just amazed at how people who listen to this program or email me while this program is on, how totally up to speed almost all of you are. I compare what you send me to what I hear on right-wing talk radio or right-wing blog sites or websites. And, you know, I'm always amazed. I shouldn't at this point because I realize that the people who listen to this program, cannot be conned or lied to or fooled. Two quick examples. Irish Dave writes in that, NARAL, National Abortion Rights Action League, got caught flat-footed by the Stupak Amendment. And Dave says these are the idiots that supported Lieberman over Ned Lamont in the Connecticut Senate race in 2006. And that's true. The National Organization for Women endorsed Ned Lamont. And the National Abortion Rights Action League endorsed the reelection of Lieberman. And Lieberman is the guy who said, it's no big deal if rape victims can't get emergency contraception in emergency rooms in Connecticut because, after all, it's only a short ride to another hospital. I mean, you know, so Dylan Radigan's guest from NARAL was very fiery, very, very right on, very willing to gut and eviscerate this freak from the Family Research Council. Why wasn't NARAL also willing to vote against a man, Joe Lieberman, who said, oh, well, I was talking to Hadassah, you know, rape is not such a big deal. They can go to a different hospital if not here in Connecticut. You know, I mean, what is up with that? You know, it's another example. I support NARAL. I have a good friend who is not the chairperson, but high in the ranks of Georgia NARAL here in the buckle of the Bible Belt. Boy, does she take her life in her hands sometimes. But I support their objectives, and their objectives are not pro-abortion. These are not, you know, I've said it a million times before. this is not a pro-abortion organization. It's a pro-privacy organization. It is fighting against the denial of the right of women to make their own decisions. I mean, where it concerns their own bodies. That's what it is. In privacy. I don't understand why people on the right don't get what Roe v. Wade was about. They don't get it because they don't want to, but it was about a constitutional right to privacy. No, there is no amendment to the Constitution that categorically states that, but the function of the Supreme Court is to interpret the law. So that was Irish Dave pointing out that Narrow backed Lieberman. National Organization for Women backed Ned Lamont. Why didn't Narrow back? Why did they back somebody who said that rape is no big deal, or it's no big deal if rape victims can't get emergency contraception in emergency rooms in Connecticut? After all, it's only a short ride to another hospital. Now, that was Irish Dave. Suzanne points out that Stupak, this dino, Democrat in name only, this guy who has presented the House version of health insurance reform bill with a poison pill that's guaranteed to sink it, that he is a Democrat from Michigan. This is a dino, a Democrat, right? He's a member of The Family. The Family. That's actually the book that I'm about a third of the way through because I'm reading two other ones written by Jeff Charlotte about this religious fundamentalist, crazy nutbag organization based in Washington, D.C., that has tentacles into not just the Republican and Democratic parties, but into just foreign governments, into the military. It's funded by a lot of Reverend Sun Myung Moon money. Hillary Clinton has participated in some of their, like the National Prayer Breakfast is a complete construct of The Family. I mean, it just never stops, does it? Well, thank goodness you folks can, immediately pick up on this stuff because I'm always looking for clarification. We got time for this? Yeah, we got another 2 minutes here. The Charleston County, South Carolina, Republican Party's Executive Committee took the step of officially censuring Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday. The Republican Committee there in Charleston County, South Carolina, admonished Graham for stepping across party lines to work with Senator John Kerry, Democrat of Massachusetts, on a bipartisan clean energy bill and other pieces of legislation. The censure stated that Graham's, quote, bipartisanship continues to weaken the Republican brand and tarnish the ideals of freedom, end quote. So Lindsey Graham has been censured by a group of goddamn sick, freaked out Republicans in Charleston. Oh, and trust me, Republicans in Charleston, South Carolina, you have never seen a group of Republicans until you have seen the Republicans from Charleston, South Carolina, dear. I am telling you now. Part of the fury from the right against Lindsey Graham is being, spurred on by the oil and gas, our coal industry. The coal industry front group, American Energy Alliance, has blanketed South Carolina with ads smearing Graham for seeking to address climate change. Where did I get? I think I got this from Think Progress. I don't know. The pressure against Graham has also stemmed from his criticism of hate radio host Glenn Beck. Graham, mocking Beck in early October, said, "Only in America can you make that much money crying." Beck responded with a slime campaign against Graham that he typically reserves for his liberal enemies. The leader of the Charleston Republican Party, Lynn Bennett, is also a member of Glenn Beck's 912 organization in South Carolina. Jesus Christ. Anyway, Lindsey Graham's spokesman defended his boss to reporters yesterday, claiming the senator has a 90% conservative voting record. Unfortunately, Lindsey, that's not going to prevent you from being eviscerated by the Nazis who are taking over your party. is 7 past the hour. Yeah, a lot of stuff coming in now on Stupak. I have no knowledge of this guy from a congressional district in Michigan. And, yeah, he's mentioned in Jeff Charlotte's book, but as being one of the people who is part of the family, this religious Nazi, this Christian Nazi organization that ignores party lines, ignores whether someone is a fascist or a progressive or a totalitarian or authoritarian. You know, they don't care. Their whole scam here, the family, is power and recognition through their through the organization. They are Christian fundamentalists. They are you know, the snake handlers raised to a respectable level. Apparently Stupak, of course, not apparently, of course, Stupak is a Catholic, as the co-sponsor is this guy, Joe Pitts, is that right? Republican from Pennsylvania. the family's, so-called church on C Street, which is where, you know, these guys can bunk, also includes people like Tom Coburn and Ensign, you know, the guy from Nevada that got caught with his, got caught stuffing one of his staffers' wives, then paying him off. It's sick stuff. Is this what Christianity has come down to? Yes. Yes. Kate T. writes, Mike, Stupak is a member of the family, that fascist Christianist organization of C Street infamy. So is the bill's co-sponsor. These people draw no line of party affiliation. They are Jesus freaks on steroids. No, they are freaks on a Jesus on steroids, a Calvinist crap fest that ought to be visited by the plagues from the Old Testament they love so much. They are sneaky, malicious MFers that are bent on our nation's destruction. Have I told you lately how much I hate these people? So, there you have it. Oh, again, I just want to acknowledge, as I did the first hour, the very professional last-minute assistance I got from Green 960's Angie Quiro yesterday when we had this remnants of Hurricane, what is it? Ida? Ripped through the North Georgia mountains, and all of North Georgia for that, all of Georgia for that matter, and just annihilated the power grid here. We were off from off of all power from about 6:30 in the evening till about 2:30 this morning, and we were absolutely panicking, Kathy and I, because we didn't know what the hell to do. Remember, on this program, we have no backup. Let me just tell you as a listener that if you ever hear something that just shouldn't be there, it's not because, you know, we've disappeared. It's because we've had a power outage that we can't deal with. And all the generating power, you know, all the generators for sale at Walmart or wherever are not going to help that because it's also phone services, all kinds of stuff. Anyway, we were faced with that, and we were trying to think, all right, how can we notify XM and Sirius and all our affiliates that we have this disaster? And then we tried to figure out a way to get chunks of a previous program up to Westwood One so they could put it on the satellite and everything. It was just madness. And then all of a sudden I thought, wait. I was just out there at Green 960, just in San Francisco, Angie Quiro. My God, her show is on local time during the first 2 hours of my program. And then San Francisco carries our program the third hour live, and then they repeat the whole 3 hours. So it was just a matter of, let me see, 1 plus 1 is 2. So we got a hold of Angie and John Scott, her boss out there, I guess I could say that. And everybody said, well, sure, of course we'll do it. Absolutely. So, great big bouquets of thanks to Angie, and her producer, who, Corey's the engineer, her producer, I can't think of the woman's name. I'm sorry, Madam Producer. Oh boy. Anyway, they just came through, boom, like that. Of course we'll do it. You know, it took about 30 seconds to make a decision. So that's why you didn't listen to weird church music and dead air last night. Anyway, thanks to Angie Quiro, who Hopefully we do it again. I drove our minivan away from all the falling trees and listened on Sirius to the first part of the show, her hosting for me last night. And it was like, wow, this person's really good. So now getting back to the crazed world of topics on this program, this is in the St. Pete Times, and it's just astonishing. There's first a couple of characters, a Marine reservist named Jason Bruce, who also apparently thinks he's some kind of a internet model or I don't know. He's a weird dude. He was getting clothes out of the trunk of his car Monday evening when a bearded man in a robe approached him. The bearded man in a robe is named Father Alexios Marakis. He is a Greek Orthodox priest. He speaks very little English, and he was lost. He was lost. He was lost in Tampa a lot. He wanted directions. But what did Jason Bruce, the Marine reservist, give him? A tire iron to the head. After he slammed this guy with a tire iron, he chased him for three blocks, pinned him to the ground. He was dialing, Jason Bruce was dialing 911 on the phone, saying he had captured a terrorist. According to young Mr. Jason Bruce, the man, that would be the Greek Orthodox priest, yelled, "Allahu Akbar," which is Arabic, isn't it? How would a Greek Orthodox... Oh, never mind. But anyway, that's what this punk ass that hit him with the tire iron said. Of course, coincidentally, those are the same words some witnesses said the Fort Hood shooting suspect uttered last week, right? Master Jason Bruce also told the police that the priest grabbed his crotch and made overt sexual advances in perfect English. And as far as the Allahu Akbar, police say young Master Bruce told them, that's what they say right before they blow you up, right? Bruce ended up in jail, accused of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. Released yesterday on $7,500 bail. The priest ended up at the hospital with stitches. He told the police he didn't want to press charges, espousing biblical forgiveness. But yesterday, the thug, Jason Bruce, wasn't saying sorry at all. Now, a little bit on Bruce. He's 28, listed as a reserve Marine as a teenager, was discharged honorably when he finished his contract, enlisted again this March. He's never been deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan. He got married last month in full dress uniform. He's sales manager for a pharmacy in Palm Harbor. His blog entries tout the benefits of increasing testosterone and human growth hormones. Online photo galleries depict him flexing big muscles wearing little clothing. Tampa Police Department spokeswoman said regarding the police report, you see a very short, small man, that would be the priest, running, and an enormous, large, muscular man chasing after him. Anyway, the priest, he made a wrong turn, got off Interstate 275 downtown Tampa, followed a line of cars into a garage at the Seaport Channelside condominium to ask for help. He found Master Bruce, whose back was turned, bending over the trunk of his car. He tapped his shoulder before saying in broken English, "Please help." That's when Bruce reached for the tire iron. By the end of the chase, he had hit the priest four times. Oh, man. Well, you know, young Master Jason Bruce, no offense to the normal people in Tampa, but Tampa, Florida is not exactly a hotbed of intellectual fervor. So young Master Bruce, having been saturated with television about Allahu Akbar and all this other nonsense, when he sees a Greek Orthodox priest, well, obviously it's an Arab terrorist, right? This portion of the Mike Bullis Show is brought to you by the 1.6 million members of AFSCME, fighting for real health care reform. It's about 22 past the hour. So the breaking news tonight is that Obama is starting to feel railroaded and hustled and forced into making a decision that I think Obama probably understands a decision that he doesn't have all the proper information. It's a decision engineered by the military-industrial complex in this country, by the neo-fascists, by the right-wing crazy people. Which is not a contradiction to what I was talking about the other night. You know, I said Obama, it appears that Obama is another one of the ruling elite family, not the family all caps, but the ruling elite people in this country who they just switch hats when they or switch horses or whatever. Maybe there is something in Obama because of his youth and his idealism. Maybe he is. I don't know. I don't know. But what is going on here, according to the Associated Press, Obama doesn't plan to accept any of the Afghanistan war options presented by his national security team. Instead, he's pushing for revisions to clarify how and when U.S. troops would turn over responsibility to the Afghan government. Information was released this evening by a so-called senior administration official. It's probably Rahm Emanuel, right? Now, that position by Obama is it comes at the same time or because of or whatever the serious forceful reservations from the U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, Carl Eikenberry. He doesn't want he's recommending against this troop buildup from the U.S. That also is according to a top administration official. And I shared that with you earlier in the program. Eikenberry said he had misgivings about sending in new troops while there are still so many questions about the leadership of Hamid Karzai. Well, duh. Remember, Karzai's brother is a major opium dealer in Afghanistan, a broker. You know, he doesn't grow the stuff, but he's a broker. And he's also on the CIA payroll. Jesus Christ. I mean, New York Times had that over the front page. What was it, a week ago? 10 days ago? So, you know, McChrystal and Petraeus, instead of saying, whoa, stop, ho, back up, Nelly, wait. No, they don't care. They want blood and guts. They want death and destruction. They want to play their goddamn sick military games in an area where we have no business playing those kinds of games. Good God. And Obama or somebody is saying, wait just a second. Hold on a minute. You know, meanwhile, that son of a bitch Cheney is talking about Obama is dithering. That sick bastard would have. I don't want to talk about Cheney. So, you know, what if Obama is just sitting there saying to himself, well, Jesus, not only am I getting bad information from my military commanders, I'm getting bad information every time I turn around. And all of a sudden, Eikenberry, seemingly in contradiction of Obama, because Obama seemed to endorse Hamid Karzai after Abdullah, his chief opponent, backed down and said, no, I'm not going through another fraudulent election. And the stuff I read in the American press seemed to indicate that Obama was going to endorse Karzai. Well, now his ambassador, Eikenberry, is saying, I'm way making this up, but what Eikenberry is saying essentially is Hamid Karzai and his brother, they're goddamn criminals. They're liars. They're cheats. They're sneaks. They stole an election. They're drug dealers. They're CIA operatives. How could Obama not know that Hamid Karzai and his brother are on the payroll of the CIA? Come on, let's get real here. Hamid Karzai was a lobbyist for Unocal, the oil pipeline consortium, you know, that wanted the rights across Afghanistan 10 years ago before we ever invaded. Whatever. So. Eikenberry said he had misgivings about sending in new troops, while there's still so many questions about Hamid Karzai. So at the same time, Obama is saying, wait a second. Obama was considering options that included adding, 20, 30, 40,000 more U.S. troops. The other option on the table today were ranges of troop increases from a relatively small addition of forces to the roughly 40 grand that McChrystal wants. That's according to military sources and other officials. So he had like three or four plans in front of him, all involved sending more troops into the meat grinder. And all of a sudden, Obama is saying, hold on a second. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 25 before the hour. Are we going to take any calls tonight? Maybe we should go ahead and open up the lines. All right. Anyway, back to Obama wants his war options changed, as reported tonight by the AP and the French news agency and a couple others. The White House says Obama has not made a final choice, so military and other officials have said he appears near to approving a slightly smaller increase than McChrystal wants at the outset. I don't know. Maybe that will come to pass. But also, where's that part here? Where Obama, you know, is saying that he's starting to feel the wrong kind of pressure. Oh, here it is. The sense that he was being rushed and railroaded has stiffened Obama's resolve to seek information and options beyond military planning, officials said, though a substantial troop increase is still likely. Yeah, I mean, isn't it supposed to work the other way? Of course it is. You know, as long as we're still pretending that we're a democratic republic, as long as we are still pretending that elected officials who go to the executive branch have certain power, as long as we are still pretending that the legislative branch of the U.S. government still has authority and independence, as long as we're pretending all this nasty stuff, then let's continue to pretend that the generals should shut the hell up. Shut your goddamn mouth. McChrystal and Petraeus, you are to activate policy determined by your civilian handlers. At least that's the way the Constitution is written. I realize that, as Bush said, the Constitution is nothing but a goddamn piece of paper. And as Nixon's press secretary so famously said one time in a different context, it's inoperative. It doesn't work anymore. We all know that. But as long as we haven't officially declared that this democratic republic is dead and it's been replaced by a form of corporatism, As long as we're still telling our children in school, well, this is how you get a bill passed. This is how we elect people to represent us. This is how we elect us. This is how we get a... As long as we're telling our children those lies and telling ourselves those lies, then, God damn it, let's continue the lie that civilian leadership lays out the plan and the military executes the plan if the military is necessary. Now, frankly, I would rather just cut the crap and go to the truth. That the presidency of the United States has become not unlike the sovereign in the UK. Well, guess who's here? Marge!
How are you, Michael?
I'm okay. Once again, I thought maybe you'd gotten eaten by the wolves or decided to go join them.
Well, you know, every time I try, my finger keeps getting shorter and shorter. You're popular as hell, you know that?
I am? Well, that's because you get the busy signal?
Yeah.
Well, part of the busy signal, we don't open up the lines until usually the last hour, hour and a half hour. So it's not that, you know, people are pounding down the phone lines to get into this program.
You got a hot bat line that I can use and call.
No, I'm sorry. We're lucky we can afford the four that we use.
Oh, is that the way you're going to be? All
or,
right.
Is it five? Yeah, I guess it's five. Yeah,
whatever.
Okay, where are we?
I'm pissed as hell.
Okay, tell me why. What now? What now, Marge?
I don't know what his front name is, but Stupak from Michigan, I would like to take out behind the barn and reason with him with a 2x4.
I bet you would. Is it Joe Stupak? I don't even know, but it doesn't matter.
I don't know what his name is.
How about this guy, huh? A Democrat. He's a Democrat, Marge.
Sure he is.
Yeah.
I mean, have you read the line where even if you're any way connected with the federal government, the insurance companies won't sell you anything, which consequently means that nobody be able to buy any kind of insurance, even if they had the damn money to pay for an abortion? Not that I'm for abortion, but what I am for, being a woman all these 74 years, is that I want free choice on what I do with my body. Thank you very much.
Amen, amen, amen. Nobody is pro-abortion. Nobody is pro-abortion. What we are pro is for everybody to keep the hell out of the business of what and how and when and why a woman does this or that or nothing or something with her own body in the privacy of a consultation with her physician, with her own understanding, whatever her ethical training has been, hopefully in the presence and input of the male who might have gotten her, you know, in that condition.
Mm.
But it's not the government's business.
No kidding. You know what I'm for, though? I'm going
or
to propose,
or the business, excuse me, of the church.
I'm going to propose an amendment for all those in Congress who would try and dictate what a woman does with her body.
Okay.
How about the Leona Bobbitt amendment?
Lorena Bobbitt. God, I remember her.
When I raised the name earlier today, I was surprised at how quickly it was recognized. I just kind of began.
Oh, well, every man will remember that. I don't know how many women remember it, but every man, as soon as you say Lorena Bobbitt, we just kind of unconsciously grab for our crotches. You know, I mean, it's just kind of a response, like, oh, no.
Is it Lena or Leona, or what was her face?
Lorena.
Lorena, okay.
Lorena Bobbitt.
God love her.
Yeah, well,
I love the last name Bobbitt. It's so apropos, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so, but I wouldn't go so far as to invoking God's love on, well, you know, whatever. God love her?
Nobody else did.
All right, the Stupak Amendment and Lorena Bobbitt Amendment. What else you got tonight?
Well... I don't know.
Now don't go to sleep on me. I realize when you're in your mid-70s, you can tend to drift off, but, you know.
I was so ticked off about that. You know, I figured that would carry me for a while. But, I mean, he was, those people in Congress, what were you talking about? The ones that, you know, that are supposed to be running our government?
Yeah. The members of the family?
That's a book. I got the book. I haven't read it all yet.
Yeah, well, it's
by
kind
Charlotte,
of...
What's his face?
Jeff Charlotte, yeah. I got real started on that, and then I, started reading the Sirens of Titan again, Kurt Vonnegut book that was written about 1,000 years ago, and got diverted. But yeah, Jeff Charlotte. What I like about that book, I took it with me when I went out to San Francisco. I was reading it on the plane, and the book jacket looks like an old-timey Bible, like what my grandmother used to have, with one of those old leather covers on it. But it says the family, which is a little bit misleading, and I had more than one person look over at what I was reading like, well, damn, look, that boy's a Christian, or something. I have no idea.
Did you read the blurb on the back by, what's-her-face, Earnhardt?
I probably did, yeah.
The one that wrote the nickel and dime story.
Oh, yeah, Ehrenreich, Barbara Ehrenreich.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
The recommendation is that, according to her, that you don't read it at night. Or if you're alone.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it must be rather scary that these people are running around loose, and they keep claiming that they're in the majority.
Well, it's scary when you realize where, once again, follow the money. A lot of the money comes for this organization from Sun Myung-moon, the Unification Church, the Washington Times, the guy who thinks he's the latest incarnation of Jesus. Mm. It is an organization that has its tentacles all over the planet.
Okay.
They are a type of Christianity that is, filled with death and blood and destruction. It's just, I don't know. And to think that they have this powerful influence.
There's one phrase that just absolutely drives me up the wall, and every time I hear it, I want to scream or break something or put my foot through the wall, and that's free trade.
Yeah.
My clavicle. I mean, whatever happened to fair trade? I mean, you can't buy something. How is it? You can buy something from China, but you can't sell something in China unless it's made there.
Well, isn't that amazing?
And these bozos that, we can't be protectionist as far as our trade agreements are concerned. I mean, my goodness sakes alive, that would be what? We can't interfere with the free market. Give me a damn bloody break.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Marge, I'm going to put you on hold because we got some commercials to do. And I'll leave you there for a while so you can listen to the program. One of these days, you're going to subscribe to XM or Sirius. or I'll tell you what, just hop on the train and go into Chicago and go up to WLS and tell them that if they don't put the Malloy program back on, you're going to do severe damage to Navy Pier. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Senberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf. Kathy Bay is our executive producer and engineer when there's something to engine. Sometimes there isn't, as it was last night. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Good to hear you on the air again. Exactly. Your Plan B hosts are... I'm sorry, I'm getting a little echo. Your Plan B host has been great with Brad and last night.
Angie.
Angie.
Yeah, I think I got a couple of really adept and talented people who fill in occasionally. I think they're both good.
Exactly. And it's always good to hear from Marge.
Yeah, right.
I love her to death.
Yeah, well, I've just gotten like three emails. One of them just says, Marge! With exclamation points after it, you know. And the other one said, I like Marge's plan, the Stupak plan, and I don't quite remember what it was, but anyway, yeah, people love Marge.
Yeah, the stupid Stupak plan.
Stupid Stupak, yeah.
Just, you know, a total retreat and take back of everything that's been gained since the 70s. As far as women's right to privacy,
mm-hmm.
You know, it is. It's a privacy issue. It's not a health issue.
That's how the Supreme Court ruled it. That it's a privacy
exactly.
issue. They never said a woman has a right to abort a fetus. A woman has a right to terminate a pregnancy. It's guaranteed in the Constitution. They never said that. What they said was a woman has a right to privacy.
Yeah, and that part gets so little airplay.
Right.
So
of course. That's why I don't like it when my friends on the proper side of this issue refer to it as choice.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
that sets them up always, because then the right can identify the choice as the life or death of a baby. You see?
Right.
I don't understand why so many people on the left are so stupid when it comes to the use of language. This is not a matter of choice. It's a matter of privacy.
Yep.
And it just pisses me off, because it makes the battle, it's their battle. I'm just a commentator or an observer of the battle, but it makes their battle so much harder when they have to defend a word like choice rather than defending a word like privacy.
Right. Yeah. Privacy is so much more universal, and it's also appeals to all their little individualistic rights nonsense as well.
Right, and it also happens to be what the Supreme Court ruled.
Oh, yeah. That's
I mean, geez, oh, God, oh,
yeah.
Well. Yeah. But the goal, and you know this, and most people who understand the implications of Roe v. Wade when it passed, and how the right wing is going to go crazy, the whole Stupak thing, the effort is to deny women the private space to do an abortion if they so choose. That's what this is about. It is to deny women, and beyond that, to deny women privacy at all, and to deny that, to take back what women have tried to get since the 20s, when they finally got the right to vote in 1920, for God's sake. Don't forget, women have only been able to vote for, what, 80 years, 90
right,
years?
Less than 100 years, exactly.
So
exactly.
The whole effort here, as it is in any fundamentalist religion, I don't care if it's Judaism, Islam, you know, the women who are part of the peoples of the book are stuck with the fact that they are second-class citizens according to the Bible, according to the Holy Quran, according to the Old Testament, and according to Christian and Islamic Jewish mythology. They are the bringers of pain and evil onto the planet. So there you go.
Yeah, that's insanity.
Yeah, <it's>
put it mildly.
That's a good working definition. It works for me anyway.
Yeah, and you got way more than 47 listeners. I figure you're way up in the 80s or 90s by now.
Probably approaching 100. All right,
yeah.
Thanks a lot.
You take care.
All right, you too, Ken. Take care.
Thanks.
Where are we? Oh, there we are. Oh, I just disconnected Marge. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm sorry, Marge. Why is it so hard for me to press buttons, Kathy? Ken is in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Ken.
Well, you disconnected Marge, and that put me ahead of the line, and I hope that you'll take me through the break.
The break, when we hit the break music, we're out of here. It's almost midnight here in the East.
And that's why I was so anxious to be...
Okay, well, go ahead. Yeah, we're wasting time. What you got on? Your mind?
I think that, and I think you'll agree with me, that corporate America chose the hand puppet George Bush to be the president. He was stupid. And corporate America chose him to be the face of America at the time. And right now I'm beginning to believe, though I voted for Barack Obama, that the same thing happened. He's going to throw 40,000 more troops in Afghanistan after saying that we need to get the heck out of there. I am so disappointed.
Well, I am too, and I make no secret of that. It's freaking me out. What Obama is doing as opposed to what I thought he would do. Now, that may be, you know, my bad for thinking. It may be your mistake for thinking that Obama was going to be something other than what he said he was going to be or what he didn't say he was going to be. As far as being, you know, one more individual selected to be president by corporate America, I fluctuate back and forth between, yes, of course, on the one hand, on the other hand, well, but maybe not. Well, yes, it was. Well, maybe not. Well, yes, you know, and it's making me crazy. I don't have any idea. I don't have any insights into that anymore. I just think the entire system is corrupt. It's filthy. It's getting worse. Corporate America, the fascists are winning. And unless the rest of us wake up, pretty soon it's going to be too late. I hate to use cliches, but boy, is that the truth. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.